approaching, we're going towards the Viaduct. The Viaduct is really an extraordinarily different type of yeshiva. It was a movement, the yeshiva. It was something very, very different in the panorama of the yeshiva world. The founding father of the Viaduct was Rabbi Yosef Yoizel Nevardik. He represented one of the three major streams of Musa movement, and his own personal tchunas anefesh, his own personal character, was extraordinarily extreme, and he built the yeshiva around it. He was somebody who was worked as a merchant. He was taken in by Musa, dropped everything, closed himself off from the world for a few years, to an extreme that he became sort of a bit of a lightning rod for the Maskilim, who portrayed him as some sort of monstrous crackpot. Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan spoke to send shluchim to him that he should stop, Aman Hashem, and so on. He ended up founding a yeshiva in 1896. His personal philosophy, his Muslim philosophy, was first of all, most of people's decisions, the vast majority, if not all of them, are made by personal negias, by personal sense of comfort. Seichel and what's right plays a minor role in making decisions. And unless a person works on himself incessantly and breaks himself down to pieces, he's never going to make honest decisions. That was one principle that was very important to him. Second one was that there is no way a person can compromise with truth. The smallest compromise, for whatever reason, is basically a total capitulation, whatever the cost is. He also he built up a whole Muslim movement which strongly believed in a lot of Muslim learning, constant working in groups, chavrusas, etc., where you sort of break yourself down, a lot of, you know, come off it, you're full of it, you're not real. He also believed that unless people do practical exercises to learn how not to care about anything and anybody, they always will do what everybody and anything expects of them. He gave a marshal, a sort of more of a description of typical than a marshal. He said, people travel on a train. Now, those days, train rides took a long, long, long time. They could go for days. People sat in compartments, which was two benches, facing two benches, and like a little wall around. And you didn't know who your seatmates were. They could be people who didn't care particularly for your religious beliefs or practices. In the morning, putting on tefillin was not extremely pleasant. So here is somebody who is a shomer Torah mitzvahs, never missed a day in tefillin. He's sitting over there, and he's in the morning, he has to put on tefillin. And he has three companions that have different shittas about tefillin than he does. So he's sitting there, and all of a sudden he says, you know, my stomach isn't feeling so well. I'm not sure that I have a gufnaki. Maybe I should be machem and not put on tefillin because of a gufnaki. And he'll not put on tefillin. Kahena v'kahena, a story about him is he had to make a decision about whether to intervene or not in something that was happening in a town across Russia. He took a train there, and with all of the difficulty of traveling. When he got there, he sat down and made a cheshbon nefesh to intervene or not, decided against it, and went back home. But he said that if he would have made that decision from the comfort of his home, he would have realized, he would have suspected that it's simply a lack of a desire to travel. The Bachrim in the yeshiva practiced that. They would sit and they would, first of all, have these musafaten where people would talk about themselves and how terrible they are and stuff like that. That was one thing that was not uncommon. Two, they would go to stores and ask for crazy things so that they would be shouted out, laughed out, etc. And basically, it taught them, don't give a damn about what the world thinks or says or looks at you. It makes no difference whatsoever. That was very strong. Working on bitachin, which again was a test of how emes you were. They could go into a forest for days without taking anything along with them. And then being sure that there'll be something for them. Those were the type of activities that were extremely... this was common Musar activities in the Nevadika movement. There was another facet to the movement, another two facets maybe, that were not directly connected with this, but radically different other yeshivas. They were something like Chabadis today in terms of outreach. Sikri Rabim was one of the most important things, and the matzav in Europe was very bad. People were going from good to less to little to nothing, and making yeshivas in every place was extremely important to him. Made no difference how, no planning, yeshivas would survive as such. A description that I once read of him making a yeshiva someplace was, they took out a map of Russia and somebody stuck a pin in at random, and they took a look, this is this town, whoa, this town really needs a yeshiva. Okay, you, Yankel, is going to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and Chaim is going to be the Mashgiach. Tzeischem L'Sholem, and then they would ask, if they need something to start the yeshiva, does anybody have maybe a jacket to give to the new Rosh Yeshiva? He would get a jacket from somebody, and they were out. They had to figure a way how to get the train expenses to get to that town. They would come to the town, they would have a shachris in the shul, they would announce that the yeshiva of such and such a town has just opened up, and the oilam is welcome to come learn. And then they would go to the streets and drag in every random kid they found. I mean, ages ranging from 10 to 20, and schlep them into the yeshiva. Lunchtime, somebody would go around from house to house asking if anybody would like to donate bread for the yeshiva. That was what it looked like. They had at the high count, they had, I think, 70 quote-unquote yeshivas across Europe, or Russia, Poland. They were extremely, they were kids that they saved. I mean, Shmuel Brudny started over there, Shmuel Birnbaum learned. Again, it was sort of a pickup station where they took kids who never would have dreamt of going to yeshiva, simply dragged them in, literally and figuratively. And kids that were later on stronger, they would go on to strong yeshivas, and they fed yeshivas sort of laterally, I would say is the right word of saying it. It wasn't, you know, from bottom up like Baranovich, but it was their own thing. Remember also that Baranovich was also started by Nevadik, by the way. The yeshiva itself, the Alter Nevadik, died at the end of World War I. He was attending Sikh Bakrim and he caught typhus and he died. But he had constructed the yeshiva in a way that was a movement. They would come together once a year. There would be there was a journal of Musa writings from all Talmidim. He had left it as a movement rather than just one person. And that was part of his foresight, and that was part of his mindset, that it's a movement to bring of Zikir Rabin, and it allowed it between the wars to survive and so on. And they stood up to the communists, and many of them were arrested and so on, but there are many daring stories of them, how they stood up. There were stories of extraordinary Mesiras Nefesh. You notice they worked on Mesiras Nefesh, they practiced it, and in a time of test, they were able to withstand things no one else was able to withstand. It, because it was so extreme, it was a lightning rod for a lot of criticism. When people wanted to associate the Muslim movement, they would choose their minhagim as the ones to, you know, to use as a, you know, a caricature maybe of the movement. The Maskilim used them as a character. There was a famous Jewish writer, Chaim Grada, who was thrown out of an Avadik yeshiva, and he wrote a book where the Chazanish was the good guy and the Vardik was the bad guy. It was kind of autobiographical in nature. The Chazanish tried very hard to be mekayer of him. The Vardik yeshiva had it out with him about it, and so on. Very, very interesting descriptions of the yeshiva and so on.
What?
He has many books, Chaim Grada, yeah. Shabbos and just saying, the Vardik was chosen because of extreme. I'll say over what Reb Chaim Shmulevitz would say about it, and it was a certain perspective, I guess, coming from the mirror about the Vardik. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz's mother was a daughter of the Altan Avadik. His father was a son-in-law, tremendous Talmud Chacham, tremendous Bal Masbir. He took him for the yeshiva, the Altan took him into the yeshiva to be a Rosh Yeshiva there. When the shiur was over, Musa would start. Bachram was so enamored with the shiur that they hung around to speak to him and learn it. So the first time it happened that Bachram was speaking to him and learning, Musa said the Altan Avadik warned him. It happened the second time. The Altan Avadik gave him a patch and just sent him out of yeshiva, never to be seen again. That's how strong-minded he was. He sent out Reb Alter Shmulevitz. The Alter's wife was Nifta. The Alter's daughter was Nifta. Not too long afterwards, Reb Alter was Nifta. His kids were Yisaimim. By this time already, the Altan Avadik himself had been and was passed away. And they grew up with their uncle, Rav Avraham Yaffin, who was another son-in-law of the Altan Avadik, as sort of their father figure. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz would say, the world outside is freezing. Avadik is a red-hot furnace. When you're freezing, you come in and warm yourself up. And Reb Chaim would go in for a few days, every so often stay in a Vardik, and you go back. And he would say, but if you stay around too long, a burning furnace, you burn to a crisp. In other words, he felt that that's passionate in Musa that they had, that extreme passion Musa, was vital as an ingredient to that world. But it could not become something that would last on its own. That was Reb Chaim Shmulevitz's perspective on it. And I think history is probably, has passed that judgment. The movement accomplished incredible things. It did not survive. It didn't survive after the war. It was over. They've tried in quite a few places to establish yeshivas, the Vardik yeshivas. Gates had his name Beis Yosef because it was established by an Avadik Talmud in Eretz Yisrael, in Bnei Brak, in Yerushalayim, many, many places in the world they tried to establish Avadik Yeshivas. It's not the Dorfer, it's not the place, not the time. There was one place where an Avadik Yeshiva was Matzliach, and that was France, where Gershon Libman was an Avadik Talmud. The yeshiva was Matzliach a lot to do with his personality. He was an Avadika in every full sense of the word. I had a friend of mine, a chavrus in the Mei Yeshiva, who learned there. A great guy, and he once told me he made two comments about his stay in Avadik. He said it was the most incredible tkuf in his life, and if he would have stayed there any longer, he'd been in insane asylum. That was the way he described his two conflicting feelings about it, which I guess dovetails very strongly with Reb Chaim Shmulevitz's comment. It demanded a certain negation of self, a certain total disassociation from the world, a certain total uncertainty of future, in ways that basically make it almost impossible to survive. Nothing remained over here, Ellie tells me. there's nothing in the town of the yeshiva left. The truth is, after the Alter Rebbe was nifta, the center of the yeshiva passed on to Rabbi Yaffe's yeshiva in Bialystok. Pinsk became a very important. Pinsk and Bialystok were two of the most important merkazim. He also put out songs. They used to make their own nigunim. It was like a movement. There was a lot more than a yeshiva. Recently, they put out one or two CDs of the nigunim. I have them at home. They're most of them in Yiddish, but it's interesting that you hear the nigunim. There's one where it's called Yankel Yankel. They have a long version, a short version. He's yearning for Mashiach comes. So he says, when Mashiach comes, so there's going to be very strong merkazim. The Varak yeshivas were built that there was a merkazi, like a central yeshiva, with these outreach places, all these derfa. They were called snifim. So he said, how wonderful it's going to be, very strong merkazim and a snif in every town. It's extraordinary. It's a whole different feel of things. And so on. Al Kopanim, so the only thing that he wrote us, they collected his shmuzim in a sefer called Madrega Sodom. That's available, it's around, it's printed, reprinted. And like I said, you know, he had many children and grandchildren, big Tamir Chachamim. The Alter Rebbe's daughter, Rebbe Tzinyafin, lived right underneath my father-in-law. I remember her well. She was very close with our family, with my father-in-law's family, and very close to my wife. She was an extraordinarily sharp-witted person, kind of very incisive person. But that was it. So it was a movement in yeshiva that rose for its kufa, made a very powerful impact, and then it's the impact it had became part and parcel of everything else in the yeshiva world. There's one more. There's a kaver of the Aruch HaShulchan of Vardik. The Hashem was a Rav in Vardik. He was very old school Talmud Chacham, Rav. He was nifta in 1906, I think. Even though he had no real shaykhs with the Musa movement, he hotly defended the Vardik yeshiva against all detractors. He realized that without a very strong yeshiva, nothing's going to happen, and so on. And he stood up for them, which was really incredible. His Sefer HaShulchan was a major work. It's you know, when you deal with Paiskim, you count it as amongst the, you know, Chashava Paiskim, and his Shitas and so on, because it's late, it's counted in as being very important. He's buried there in the Beis HaKvaris, who's Nifta 1906, I think. And the Torah Tumim of everybody probably knows is his son, Al-Kapanev. That's where we're going. In a sefer called Madrigas Adam.
Oh, it's in the sefer.
There's a big set, it's about 15 volumes, available at our yeshiva, and today in Arzach Chochma, everything's available. It's called, it's a blue set, 15 volumes. It's not called, or a Musar, or something like that. It has, they collected anything that a Navardika wrote on the parasha Musa, they collected it and they put it together. So that's available also. They very much had things like periodicals for all the Musa shmuz of all the movements, so that they would feel that there's a commonality of Navardika. Yaffin was a son-in-law of Navardika. It's hard to describe him as a Navardika. You know, his personality was not. His children are anything but.
They were very chilled out.
Huh?
Very chilled out.
Yeah, they're all very, very chashvet Talmei Chachamim. Rav Aaron Yaffin was an extraordinary Talmud Chacham. everybody at Nevada. The Alta said, fantastic. And I said, I would like to come and discuss philosophy with you. He said, fantastic. My time is for you. Let's sit down. But one ground rule. We're going to spend a week talking. If you're right, I'm tossing my yarmulke out the window. I'm leaving everything here and I'm going to university with you. If I'm right, you're staying here and you're learning in yeshiva. So he said, Rabbi, it means so extreme. I just wanted to discuss. He said, life is too short for discussions. Life is to pursue the emes. I'm willing to recognize that the emes by you, I will drop it all. But I need you to recognize that if the emes by me, you stay. He didn't take him up on the offer. That's a typical, that's really what he felt